the physiotherapy practice that Hans van der Poel, YL3JD, and his wife Sandra operate in Latvia. The family dogs greet.
Hi, this is Kenny Kramer, the real Kramer, and you're listening to WGXC Acre. And as Cosmo would say, giddy up!
Are you a night owl? Do you like to keep other people awake? Want to do a late night radio show on WGXC? Your community radio station has slots open for interesting late night shows. Something scary or strange. A show about what lurks in the night. Or music meant for late night listening. Apply for a show at midnight at WGXC.org and become a part of your community.
Hello, WGXN listeners. This is Kelly Ann McCon. Campbell Hudson Community Dinner returns. Come one, come all. Community Dinner is back at Campbell Hudson on Tuesday, September 5th at 5:30 at our Solaris building at 360 Warren Street, Hudson, New York. Come experience community, meet new people and old friends over a freshly prepared meal with locally sourced vegetables made by our local volunteers. We'll be glad to see you there, and please, please bring a great friend. Hey.
Wayfarm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wayfarm and our radio station, WGXC, operate and broadcast. The Mohicans named themselves the people of the waters that are never still, following their arrival along the Mohicanitta, the great ebb tide river also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For further information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit Mohican.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Marcus DeGrazia Acupuncture of Austerlitz, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org. and click donate. Thank you for your support.
You know, I was listening to the radio and I heard this thing.
90.7 FM, listener aided and abetted radio.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Nancy Kern reports for Columbia Green Media that the Town of Catskill Planning Board holds a public hearing about a proposed subdivision with 25 housing units on 140 acres at 6:30 p.m. on October 10th at the Catskill Town Hall. Town Planning Board Chair Teresa Golden said she doesn't know if developer Vita Forest wants to market the subdivision dwellings as investment properties to be utilized as short-term rentals. Golden said, and I quote, "From a planning board perspective, that's something we don't focus on. We only see if the development complies with requirements from a planning board perspective. That's a beautiful piece of property. It's got a gorgeous waterfall. One of our major concerns is to ensure that the wetlands are protected and the land is being used appropriately so as not to impact the flora and fauna," end quote. So far, the planning board is blocking developers from using herbicides on the property. Now the board is waiting for public input on the subdivision with an entrance from Bogart Road and a second egress on Penny Lane. Golden said, and I quote, "We never know if there will be controversy at the public hearing. The beauty of the public hearing is we hear from the neighbors who live in the neighborhood. I welcome input from neighbors," end quote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Nancy Kern reports for Columbia Green Media that at a meeting on August 21st, the Athens Town Board agreed to pay a local engineer to begin a study on how to modernize the Athens Community Center. The building was put up in 1901 and currently houses the municipal offices of the town and village of Athens. Previously, there has been an elementary school and Columbia Green Community College classes in the building. The spending passed 3-1 with Councilperson Anthony Plough as the dissenting vote. The town and the village will split the $50,000 bill. Athens Town Supervisor Michael Perrone said, and I quote, "We want to start updating things, get more modern in handling the books and records and archives and so forth. The mayor and deputy mayor suggested we join together in this study to determine how the building can best serve us either in modernization, expansion, renovation, whatever the study is going to show, that's where we're going to go," end quote. Councilperson Michael Regani wants to create a meeting space. He said, and I quote, "We're meeting at an office. There's nowhere to make a decent-sized meeting room. Each floor is one-third hallway. The building is solid, but it was laid out for a school," end quote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Atro Snyder reports for the Times Union that the first El Nino climate pattern seen in the Pacific in 4 years may mean a late frost and a winter with little snowfall and warm temperatures. The National Weather Service's Climate Prediction Center says temperatures are around 50% more likely to be above normal this fall and winter, likely because of the return of El Nino. Paul Roundy, a professor of atmospheric and environmental science at the University of Albany, said, and I quote, "So El Nino this year is not a normal El Nino event. This one is special because it came right after a very long period of La Nina," end quote. The last time El Nino was around, there were some startling statistics. Christmas Eve 2015 reached 72 degrees, and the earliest 80-degree day in the Albany area was recorded on March 9, 2016. Roundy said, and I quote, "It was the warmest winter on record, but we also had one of the coldest nights in a decade," end quote. Roundy said, "This year, the El Nino weather pattern is situated further east, which usually leads to milder winters and less snow." He said, and I quote, "This one is so far to the east and so strong at this point, it's less likely to go back to the Central Pacific," end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. And that wraps up the WGXC Daily News. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
From Iran to the U.S., our history of coups has come home to roost. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. August 19th marked the 70th anniversary of the overthrow of Mohammad Mossadegh, the first democratically elected prime minister of Iran. It was the first coup d'etat in the modern era orchestrated by the United States, launching decades of coups, assassinations, and regime change. While Iran's grim anniversary generated scant attention in the United States, one attempted coup was in the news as defendants in the Fulton County, Georgia election interference case against former President Donald Trump and his 18 co-conspirators began surrendering for arrest. This is the second indictment served on Trump for his attempted coup against the U.S. following his 2020 election defeat. The Trump-summoned mob that stormed the U.S. Capitol almost stopped the peaceful transfer of power. The violence on January 6, 2021, though, was just a shadow of the bloodshed that accompanied countless U.S.-sponsored interventions around the globe. President Dwight Eisenhower's administration was directly involved in Mossadegh's overthrow, but it had help. The CIA was just 6 years old in 1953. Britain's spy agency, MI6 by comparison, had been around for decades, had two world wars behind it, and had fomented uprisings and intrigue the world over as Britain struggled to maintain its waning empire. By the 1950s, the British Empire's lifeblood was petroleum, pumped from Iran's oil fields by the British-controlled Anglo-Iranian Oil Company. In 1951, tired of being plundered, the Iranian parliament nationalized its oil industry. The movement was led by Mohammad Mossadegh, who not long after was elected prime minister. He would remain in office for just over a year as the U.S. and the U.K. plotted to retake control of Iran's oil. The extent to which MI6 partnered with the CIA in Mossadegh's ouster was revealed when a remarkable documentary, Coup 53, premiered in 2019. The film, directed by Taghi Amirani, an Iranian-born physicist-turned-filmmaker, uncovered the coup's long-concealed direction by an MI6 operative named Norman Derbyshire.
We all grew up with the story of the CIA coup run by Kermit Roosevelt.
Amirani said on the Democracy Now! NewsHour. He was describing Kermit Roosevelt, recruited by CIA Director Alan Dulles and his brother, Secretary of State John Foster Dulles, to be the CIA's point person on the Iran coup. He was the grandson of President Theodore Roosevelt. Kermit Roosevelt gave numerous interviews practically bragging he brought $1 million into Iran for the coup, but only spent $60,000 of it.
Kermit didn't speak Persian. He was only in Iran for 3 weeks. He didn't know Iran at all. He was more of a bagman and an adventurist.
Amirani said, going on to describe MI6's principal Iran operative.
Derbyshire was in Iran from the age of 19 as a soldier. He spoke probably better Persian than me. He knew the Iranian street. He really understood the psyche of the Iranian mob, as he says in the interview in our film. He knows how to turn them, what buttons to press.
Amirani's research for Coup 53 uncovered troves of forgotten material. He found a transcript of an interview with Derbyshire. When the initial CIA-led coup attempt failed, a mercenary mob hired by Derbyshire swept through Tehran, surrounded Mossadegh's house, and with the help of rebellious army officers, attacked the residence and arrested Mossadegh. The U.S. and Britain installed a puppet, Mohammad Reza Pahlavi, as the Shah of Iran. He ruled for a quarter century, guided by the CIA in the creation of SAVAK, a brutal state security apparatus that terrorized and killed Iranians who dared to speak out. In 1979, the Shah was overthrown during the Iranian Revolution, ushering in strict theocratic rule that persists to this day. Amirani's research brought him to the nonprofit National Security Archives in Washington, D.C., which prize classified documents from the U.S. government for public access. One key CIA document obtained by the archive in 2013 reads, "The military coup that overthrew Mossadegh and his National Front cabinet was carried out under CIA direction as an act of U.S. foreign policy conceived and approved at the highest levels of government," unquote. In one chilling interstitial in Coup 53, document boxes that line the wall of the archive's reading room scroll by, listing successive U.S.-sponsored coups, attempted coups, and military interventions that followed the overthrow of Mossadegh. Arbenz, Guatemala, 1954. Lumumba, Congo, 1961. Trujillo, Dominican Republic, 1961. Diem, Vietnam, 1963. Goulart, Brazil, 1964. Sukarno, Indonesia, 1965, Salvador Allende, Chile, 1973, and others from the invasion of Grenada in 1983 to the wars in Nicaragua and El Salvador in the 1980s, the ongoing attempts to overthrow the governments of Cuba and Venezuela to the invasion and occupation of Iraq. Hopefully confronting a homegrown attempted coup with the multiple prosecutions of Donald Trump and his co-defendants will hasten a reckoning with our nation's violent history plotting coups abroad. On the 70th anniversary of the coup in Iran, such self-reflection is long overdue. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
And now, here is your WGXC Weekend Weather Report. The National Weather Service in Albany is forecasting patchy fog before 9 a.m. today, then a chance of showers and thunderstorms mainly between 4 p.m. and 5 p.m. Otherwise, it will be a partly sunny Saturday with a temperature high near 79 degrees and a north wind at around 6 miles per hour. Tonight, it will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 58 degrees and a north wind at around 7 miles per hour. Your Sunday weather will be partly sunny with a temperature high near 73 degrees and a north wind at 5 to 7 miles an hour. And on Sunday night, it will be partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 55 degrees. And on Monday, mostly sunny with a high near 76 degrees. And on Monday night, mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 60 degrees. And that is your weekend weather report from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears, in Greene and Columbia counties.
We have some guests, and one is a someone I've known for a number of years here in Hudson, Stella Yoon, who has recently become the executive director, or the ED,
the ed, yeah.
Did you hear that?
Yeah.
of Create. And you have with you someone. Can you tell us who that is?
Yep. I have Michelle Saunders. She is a longtime Catskill enthusiast, culture enthusiast, and our partner in organizing our upcoming fundraiser that's happening this weekend.
Ah, I see. And as part of that fundraiser, they're having light green hair?
That's just Michelle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought it might
radiating
goodness.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
So let's begin with some basics. What is CREATE?
CREATE Council on the Arts is the art council for Greene, Columbia, and Schoharie counties, and primarily serving artists and art organizations with grant funding opportunities, resources, and support and community. So.
Does it have a physical space?
It does.
And where's that?
398 Main Street in Catskill.
That's in Catskill.
Yeah.
So you give out grants or you?
We do. We get money from the state art council. That there's an application process that people can apply for, and so essentially we re-grant money from the state as well as the counties. Actually, there are some upcoming Columbia County opportunities. We'll announce that before the end of the year.
What do you mean? You mean grants that you're going to get in Columbia County?
Yeah.
And what's your annual grant budget like?
From the state, I think this past cycle it was around $180,000 across the three counties.
Yeah.
And for Columbia County right now, there's about $9,000.
Wait, out of 180, we only get nine?
No. Separately. Okay, so there's state money.
Right.
And then Columbia County.
Oh, contribute.
From the county. There's,
that's typically cheap of Columbia County. Yeah, they like to sit on money.
So in terms of if someone applies to the grant, how much money can they get?
Right now, so the NISCA, the New York State Council on the Arts, they can get up to $5,000 for a project. Individual artists can get up to $2,500.
Wow. And that was John asking that question. He's trying to learn how to ask questions. So forgive him if they don't really penetrate well. You know, he's new at this. Sorry,
John. You're doing great.
So now, my understanding is that CREATE was kind of like on the downslide for a while. Is that true? Or it was having problems?
I think the pandemic was really hard. Ah. There's been a lot of transitioning. So CREATE originally was founded as the Greene County Council on the Arts in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And I know that Columbia County had an art council. I remember there was one at the time that I first moved here 12 years ago. That is no longer around. Over the last few years.
Did they have a little building up in the North County somewhere? I recall.
Actually, on Warren Street, it used to be.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. and they used to do an art walk in October, but that was many, many years ago. Yeah. So CREATE, in the last couple of years, rebranded and
rebranded.
Officially.
John, that's a key term, rebranding. That's when things aren't looking good and you decide to reinvent yourself.
Well, it's renamed.
Twitter to X.
Oh, gosh. Twitter to Don't get me started. Yeah. But yeah, so in the last couple of years, it's become the art council for the three counties, hence, a necessity to rebrand and, you know.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
So, Stella, tell us a little about yourself. I know some stuff about you, but what do you bring to this new job? How long have you been in the position?
Since June.
Oh, okay.
So, very new position. Most recently, I founded and ran Hudson River Exchange, mm-hmm. Which still does technically exist, but I think through the pandemic and just shifts in priority and life, not as much right now as a focus.
So you had a commercial space, so to speak, on Warren Street, and then you had events at the waterfront, I recall.
Yeah, so we were doing markets for makers and, you know, local handmade businesses, and on Warren Street, essentially it became this retail incubator. We were showcasing different makers from the area on a rotating basis. We had some studio spaces in the back that people were renting and selling out of.
At the Warren Street.
A lot going on back there. There was, we've had a number of people come through who have opened their own retail spaces since working with us. A few that I can name on Warren Street are Inky. Mm-hmm. She's at the top of the park. And then
Bolar.
Yes, Bolar. And then actually Artemisia, the clothing store, a couple doors down from our former space.
Mm-hmm. On the corner of Fifth and Warren.
That's right.
The northeast corner.
Yep. And Fahari, who has a shop in Chatham, was kind of testing out
fellow
Hudson
CrossFitter,
through our space.
By the way, unfortunately, Sheila's not here to make fun of that comment, but Fahari is a CrossFitter, fellow CrossFitter, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I believe it. She's a badass.
She totally is.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right, her shop is in Chatham.
Yeah. So I guess just very briefly, I am a creative. I went to art school, and actually coming out of art school, I was kind of thinking about going to grad school for art administration and curating, took a different turn, got into kind of the commercial art retail world, worked in visual merchandising and got into prop styling, working in the photography world and all sorts of different kind of creative jobs in New York City. And then I moved up here, founded Hudson River Exchange with a few folks. And this job is kind of actually a little full circle moment for me because, you know, as a young person, I thought that I would be an arts administrator,
and that's what you're going to be doing.
That is essentially what I'm doing now.
So you have a significant budget to dole out as grants throughout, the three counties?
Mm-hmm.
Schoharie, Columbia, and Greene.
Mm-hmm.
Equally? Or is it based on population or whatever?
Yeah. It's based on...
So given your background, will this be like, will there be crafty type people as well as, you know, people who aren't, you know, so focused on the marketplace? In other words, a painter doesn't necessarily, is a lot different than a potter who's trying to sell their ceramics, you know, for
I mean, yes and no. Yes and no. I mean, everyone, you know, is essentially trying to find a market and an audience for their work, and those marketplaces are and audiences may be different, but I think fundamentally it's the same or a lot of same principles. You're essentially running a small business as an artist or a maker. I think there's a deep relationship between, you know, to me, in a way, it's all kind of the same. Creatives are, it's a big umbrella. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, through Hudson River Exchange, it was a business really run mission-centered, and some people thought it was a nonprofit because of that. Mm-hmm. I think community building is something that I'm personally really interested in and essentially got to do through that project, and I'm really excited to have a platform like an Arts Council that its role is to essentially build creative community, and there's infrastructure there that mm-hmm. exists, support from local to state government, and additional resources that we can tap into. And I think being where we are between these counties, there's so much opportunity to collaborate with the small businesses for economic development, because we all know, you know, the arts really inspire, you know, cool places to live and mm-hmm. People doing interesting things. So, I think for me, I get to do the things that I'm excited to do, which is connecting with creatives, building a community, and celebrating, you know,
when you talk
all the talent.
Building community, are some of the potentially fundable projects sort of educational in the sense that you could bring in kids and things like
yeah.
that?
Yeah, there are different categories, and, you know, there's additional information on the website, and actually our next grant cycle is going to open up in January. So there's community projects, arts education projects, then you know, individual artist projects. You know, compelling applications, there's like a strong tie to how it's serving the community or speaking to community needs.
So the application process is, do you have a panel?
There are panels.
They change.
There are people from each county that review. So the panels are county specific.
Mm-hmm. Are they what's the word I want to use? Category specific. So, you know, theater versus
performing arts versus visual art.
Visual art, right.
You know, the panelists can be anybody within any stakeholder or resident within a county. I think it's interesting because it's serving the community, and the community is not necessarily all artists. So mm-hmm. I think it's helpful to have people who are interested in supporting these types of projects or interested in getting involved. I think that's the most important thing and the biggest qualifier. But, yeah.
We're talking to Ellie Yoon, the new executive director of CREATE.
And here it's time now on WGXC to update you with what's going on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org. Go there and you can click on the add an event button. And if you're helping put on some local event, you can cut and paste the information in the boxes. And soon enough, someone like me will be reading about your event on the radio at 90.7 and seeing it around the world in the WGXC community calendar at WGXC.org. Friday, August 25th, there's a House Blend concert. It's the third one at PS21 in Chatham with Adam Tendler on piano and Ayono Katarogo on percussion. That's from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at PS21 in Chatham on Friday night. Saturday in Catskill at the United Methodist Church, the weekly ukulele jam happens from 1:30 to 3 p.m. In Great Barrington Saturday at Ski Butternut, the Pink Floyd cover band The Machine are doing The Wall in its entirety at Ski Butternut in Great Barrington, 4:30 p.m. to 10. There's a nature community masquerade at the Kingston Point Rotary Park Saturday, August 26th at 5 p.m. William Tyler and the Impossible Truth and Garcia Peoples perform at Tubby's in Kingston Saturday, August 26th. That's at 8 p.m. Sunday, August 27th is the traditional Irish music session. Every week at the Shamrock House, you can bring out your instruments and jam with other locals from 2 to 5 p.m. at the Shamrock House in East Durham. Then on Monday, August 28th, Columbia County is honoring a vet. Veterans Committee will honor Tech Sergeant Jack Hallenbach The public is invited at the ceremony 9 a.m. at the Columbia County Office Building, 401 State Street in Hudson. These events and many more are on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.